The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
Now, when you're in this hypnotic trance, and you think you're conscious, you can see almost anything. These things are from outer space. There are strange things in the sky. Skyships were taking souls away into space. And you're going to a trance. You think you're conscious. You can see almost anything. There were flying saucer sightings galore. You can see almost anything. There are strange things in the sky. We haven't been searching for the strength. There were flying saucer sightings galore. We have to take the little people seriously. These things are from outer space, and you're going to a trance.
And starting the show off tonight a little differently there. That was sang from the International Vortex League with The String. And we're here with Andy Colvin. Are you there?
I'm here.
All right. And that is one of your bands, is it not?
It is. That's my all-time number one band.
And how old is that song?
Oh, boy. 5 years, 8 years, something.
Okay, so not real old.
You know, I'm trying to think. Yeah, about 5 years. It was the guy that put it together was just over here visiting. We're working on a movie. That's DJ Novocaine, 132 is his name. Seattle hip-hop producer. Hmm. And working on a movie of WTO. We were at the WTO protests and Novocaine was more or less my star of the movie. He just had an interesting he really took charge at the WTO and went around and interviewed people about their beliefs and so forth, and it turned out to be a really good, great movie that sort of made a splash on the hip-hop scene. And we're just trying to get it together for something more of a mainstream type release.
Oh, that's cool. You've done a bunch of documentaries, haven't you?
I've worked on several, yep. And I'm just working on different things. One of the getting those things into print, or I mean digitally downloadable, is one thing that I'm working on. Is I've got this huge backlog of photos and films, little documentaries and things I've done, albums. I've got at least 20 more albums.
Wow.
That came out at various times that we're remastering. So that was what I did pretty much all through 2012. We put out 9 albums. Most of them are new. Couple of older ones though that we're starting to work back through the catalog, going back in time.
Now, are these all International Vortex League?
Interdimensional.
I'm sorry, that's right.
Yeah, we go back to the 70s, where we had a show. We knew a DJ at WKAZ, and we had a little funky show that we did, like a really bad talk show. And that's how we got started. And we eventually started doing music for ads, and we had fake ads and things. It was a really funny show. If you go to the CD Baby site for our band, there's a description of those developments, some of which are pretty interesting and tie in a way to the Mothman story.
Yes, and you grew up in Mothman country, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. My mother was from West Virginia, and my dad was from New York, up there near Glens Falls. And so I was sort of an unusual kid, I suppose, because we would go to New York a lot in the summers and things, and yet so you're kind of growing up in this, you know, in the mountains with a certain type of people, and your mom's people are a certain way, and your dad's people are from New York, and they're completely different. Like, you know, one of my New York uncles was a big gambler down at Atlantic City, and great guy. But he, you know, he just had the aura of a mobster. And the interesting thing about him was that he actually won at craps, big money too, because he was psychic.
Really?
Yes, he claimed that was his secret.
Huh.
This is after he got old and given it up, that he revealed his secret. Wow. There's a lot of psychics in my family, which may, I don't know, have something to do with whether or not you encounter unusual entities.
Yeah, yeah, because you can see into different realms.
Yeah, there's times when things happen like that for me, and synchronous things too. But I'm not the kind of person that's always interacting with any. I'm really kind of the opposite kind of person. I've never wanted to see anything unusual. Really, I'm more of a fraidy cat probably than anything else. And so it's never been something that I wanted to really investigate. But when the Twin Towers came down, you know, I knew that at that point that there was actually something to it, because that had been predicted by one of the kids I had known.
Really? And that was back when you were a kid?
Yeah. Yeah. He said he got the message from Mothman.
Huh.
And I remembered that. And then I realized, hey, there's something to this. So, and I was already familiar with Kiel. And so I just embarked on doing a video series, which grew to about 33 hours.
Wow.
And then we took that video series and transcribed it for the series of books that I put out.
And which books are those?
Mothman's Photographer 1, 2, and 3, and Mothman Speaks, Mothman Shrieks, and Mothman Squeaks, which is coming out any day now, pretty much. It covers the whole 10-year period from 2001, 911 to basically last year. All the correspondence I had, all the people I interviewed, and it's sort of a time capsule, but it's just going to sit there for people that want to check it out. It's a compendium of different pieces of information, interviews on the radio, even some of the radio interviews I've done with other people, and video interviews, writings of John Keel and people like that, Gray Barker, other people even.
How well did you know John Keel?
Whatever I felt like went in.
How well did you know John Keel?
Sorry, you cut out of me there, but I heard you say that how well did I know Keel?
Yes.
I didn't know him that well. I just met him in 2003. But he knew that I was serious about my Mothman experiences, and that I was serious about trying to do something. at least with regards to the video series at that time. Mm-hmm. And he was very supportive for about 3 years, and then he pretty much dropped communication with everybody at that point.
Is that when he got sick?
I don't know exactly. I suppose, yeah, he started feeling bad. And but by that was, I had already started the books at that point, so he had given me access to some stuff and gave me, you know, support to actually write some books on what I knew. And so that's what I did.
Okay, and you've just released a couple of books of his collected writings of different talks he's given and different articles he's written. One of them's called The Flying Saucer to the Center of Your Mind. And where does that title come from?
Oh, it's just something I thought of.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was a quote from him somewhere along the line or not.
Oh, well, let me think. There must have been a genesis, but I can't remember what it was. I know I should have that on the tip of my tongue, but
it's a great title. It really is.
I think I may have got, you know, I was thinking about a book called Flying Saucers to Hell. I took a flying saucer to hell or something. There's a book like that, and I thought, well, I guess what I, you know, for me, it makes sense, because rather than they don't necessarily take you to hell if you become involved in the UFO abduction thing, but they're going to the center of your mind. They are, you're being programmed somehow by the phenomenon that's out there, be it natural or whatever, or maybe synthetic, but you're being programmed. And that was John Keel's basic message, I think, that this programming is happening.
Right.
What is it all about?
And I think Jacques Vallée was on that same level too.
Yeah.
So,
what fascinates? Are you fascinated in Keel because of the New York connection? He grew up around.
Yeah,
there.
He grew up somewhere up here, and then just kind of like what, walked to New York City one day and got a job.
Yeah, I don't know if he walked, but
I think it was in Jado. He talks about how he just kind of packed up his stuff and walked off one day.
Huh. Well, I assume he may have hitched a ride or something. But yeah. That probably is true.
And he just kind of did what he wanted to do.
Yeah, he was a great traveler.
I had actually discovered Keel because of Fate magazine and the articles he did in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then slowly picked up all his different books as I went along. Jado was one of the last ones I picked up because it was so hard to get a hold of that, or it didn't cost a fortune. And
that's a good book.
Yeah, it was a great book. I mean, it's not so much covering the UFO phenomenon stuff like all his other ones, but it really is a very interesting, intriguing book. One of the things we've discussed here on the show before, because people have mentioned it, is that Keel has been accused occasionally of making some of his stuff up or not reporting exactly what happened. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think if I don't know that you see that in any of the books. If you see it in the articles, it was probably... Well, I take that back. He said that the editor of Jadu made up some stuff. But it wasn't Keel doing it. It was an editor wanting to exaggerate something or make what Keel had said was a possibility into more of a firm reality.
Ah, okay.
So that's really an important thing. And I think Keel was probably affected by that more than some of the other writers in the field, because his stuff was being edited at that level where, you know, these are well-read magazines that, and that you had to do it on deadline, and there were going to be bureaucracy issues, you know, screwy editors, who knows. But yeah, he blamed most of that stuff on, if not all of it, on his editors.
And of course he's most well known, of course, for the Mothman prophecies, and he did have something to do with the movie too, right? He was like a consultant.
Yes, I don't know to what extent, but he got paid for the rights. And I don't know if he was on the set a lot or what. I saw the making of the Mothman Prophecies. I don't remember him. They may have interviewed him.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of took the UFO component out of the movie when they made it as well.
Yeah, they took the, I guess, you kind of cut out there. I don't know. It must be, who knows. I live near these huge towers, so sometimes, I don't know if that does affects things. But, they did a lot of things in that movie.
I liked it overall. I mean, I thought it had the right feel to it. It just didn't really cover the events as they happened.
Right. But the weird thing is that there were a couple of scenes that seemed to me that came from my dreams.
Really?
Yeah, like they put something on the film that I dreamed about or talked about. It's a spooky movie. In that the director experienced some of the phenomenon after he had made the movie.
Oh, really?
That echoed things that were in the movie.
Huh.
In a tragic sort of fashion.
Like what?
Well, he lost his wife to some brain something. I don't know. I can't remember what it was. Something that's similar, that was similar to the movie.
Wow.
And at that time, there was a lot of irresponsible talk about a death list of people who had gotten worked on Mothman projects and had died, and it was just one of many unfortunate memes that have been cast about to give people the wrong idea about what was going on.
Well, can you talk a little bit about what was going on for people who aren't familiar with it?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just the depictions, the very simple stuff. The depictions of Mothman that you see that get propagated the most are the most, while they do jive with Kiel in some places, like with the red eyes, mm-hmm. there's also a whole body of sightings that don't have red eyes. And what happened, I think, there is that, again, the editors wanted to highlight the red eyes because that was more dramatic.
Right.
But what's even creepier to me is when its eyes aren't red.
Why?
Well, because you're having a more subtle form of communication. It's approaching you more. You know, with the red eyes, it's like you're being warned off, so you're obviously going to walk away. But when it's not, it's like it actually walked up. It walked toward me, and its eyes weren't red.
And when you saw it, what did it look like?
It looked like a silhouette, a black hole silhouette of a person whose joints were double jointed, and maybe had wings or something back there tucked up. But it seemed to have the personality of the kid that had predicted 911. I really, really felt like it was somehow connected to him. Like maybe it had soaked up some of his characteristics or something. Maybe it's a, you know, that's one of the theories, is that it's a, it's kind of like the thing that Schwarzenegger was fighting in the jungle, except it would be more organic and it would be learning from you. And taking on your characteristics. It's a shapeshifter.
And what do you think the UFO connection there is?
Oh, well, there's the natural side of it and the synthetic side of it. And the natural lights are sort of exist in the same realm as these silhouette creatures or Mothmen.
You mean like earth light type of phenomena?
I lost you there. Say that again.
Like earth light type of phenomena?
I heard you say phenomena.
Yeah, I just got a whole bunch of static for some reason. Like earth lights.
Earth lights, yes. Yes, there's, yes. It could be that. It could be that fuels the forming of the entity somehow, or becomes the entity, or but they could also be projected by human minds, perhaps.
Kind of like a tulpa, a thought form?
Right. Yeah. Hmm. And we had some genius kids in the area at the time, and I've heard that through one of my Buddhist contacts, that some of the monks from Tibet were reincarnating in the Ohio Valley to fight the Chinese from America. And they also, these lamas also claim to be able to turn into balls of light and also into Garudas, which are birdmen. So,
and that's one of the things that the Mothman gets compared to.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. If you can say I guess they are two different things, you know, an earth light versus a mental light.
Mm.
And I don't know, you know, I didn't practice that meditation, so I don't know exactly how they're doing.
Yeah, and you were a Buddhist priest, did you say?
Yeah, for about a year.
Hmm. Yeah. And then that stuff, you were saying that one of the things you've taken to doing is analyzing like patterns and symbols and stuff, and that's something that is part of Buddhism, but you didn't do while you were a priest so much.
Yeah, I had a couple of really shocking experiences with precognition when I was going through my initiation. Hmm. That really relieved me. It almost relieved me of any feeling that I had to do any of these rote visualizations or anything. I just felt like I was tapped into it enough that, you know, because a lot of people's religious practices are designed to get them in touch with something.
Right.
And I just feel like I'm already in touch with it, and I don't really have to do any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I didn't really get along in the Buddhist group, was I didn't feel like I needed to do any, the same thing they were doing.
Right, right.
Unless it was, you know, just for certain things, just for, you know, I don't know. There were times I just wanted to do something else because it was right for me, and I think people that are joiners always have a hard time with that. If you can just say, you know, I just don't want to do this thing here, and I'm not going to be part of the group for that time period. You know, I could do a whole series of books on American social interaction. I'm very interested in it, and I've read a lot of the history of psychoanalysis, psychotherapy. And I find it very fascinating.
Hmm.
And I sometimes get tied up in watching that stuff when I should be doing something more more exciting, or I don't know. You can only do so much of that stuff. I just go through periods. I go through periods where I intently study some subject. And for a while, for a while it was Wilhelm Reich and all of that,
mm-hmm.
You know, all the different Steiner, anthroposophy, theosophy. And then you start to see a sort of a global map of how things interact and where things came from, trends, memes, practices. And I don't know how I would have organized it. It was kind of nice to have something like this Mothman experience to sort of organize my thoughts.
And so you saw the Mothman. Was that the only thing that happened? Is that that one interaction?
There was another sighting earlier during the initial wave where I saw it flying. Again, a silhouette.
And was this while the main sightings were going on, or was this like before or after?
It was right during the first sightings.
Okay.
And then 5 years later, I saw it again after this kid had seen it there, and two other kids had seen it there, and a lady that lived there saw the balls of light, things that we might associate with a Garuda. I talked to a guy who still lives there last year, and he says there's still stuff going on.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. I thought all the stuff had quieted down after the bridge collapsed.
Well, that's what they say, but that's just not true.
Huh.
That's just one of many things that they say about the story that aren't true.
Yeah, what else?
I mean, we've got the description is wrong. The mm-hmm. description is misleading. Especially the part where Mothman doesn't have a head. I don't think that... I think very few of them are headless, if any. And probably because when a bird looks at you straight on at night, you wouldn't be able to see its neck.
Right.
Anyway. So, if it had, you know, and we do have descriptions of it having a long neck and it's seen in broad daylight flying, so, by several witnesses at once. So, I'm going to go with the ones, you know, where there's more witnesses.
Right, right. And what about the men in black who were seen around the same time, intimidating witnesses and such?
Oh, well, they're a bit of a mystery, too. We've got several categories of those guys.
Yeah. And it seems like some of them may be a part of the same phenomenon. Some of them might be government involved.
Yes. And some of them could be, again, Buddhist priests. Or the Chinese government looking for Buddhist priests.
Huh.
Because this is a real thing. The Chinese government goes after reincarnations of lamas.
Really?
Wherever they are, yes.
How do you even track something like that?
It's in the newspaper.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. All right.
I have found articles about it, many, in fact, and it's a well-known thing in the Buddhist community, so... I like talking about the Buddhist stuff because I think it's one of the more theories that doesn't get talked about as much.
So, yeah, I haven't heard about it.
But it could explain the whole shebang.
You think the whole thing can be explained that way?
Anything in West Virginia, maybe. I don't know about in New Jersey, but there seems to be a connection with New York and New Jersey. The MIB there seem to be the same one. So we're in West Virginia. These are going to be humans, and they impersonated John Keel and Jim Mosley and Gray Barker.
Right.
They visited the street where I saw the creature, and all the other kids did. They were there, the same guys.
Did you ever have any interactions with them?
It exists in a weird dream state, so I can't really say that I've met them in daylight. Harriet, one of my key witnesses, had, you know, daytime interaction with them. There's a strange incident I write about in. That where our family may have been interrogated while under either hypnosis or some sort of gas that I remember happening. So it seems like it was a dream.
Right.
But my sister, later I found out she had the same dream. And she freaked out when I told her that I thought it might have been a real thing, if both of us remember it.
Right.
Who were these two guys that were grilling us? And one thing about kids is that they're harder to hypnotize. And I think that I somehow remembered it. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I did meet him.
But just not in a normal state of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so you've got those guys that I think are working for somebody, some government or group, and I think that there are probably Buddhist monks are going around looking for reincarnations, and probably bad Oriental MIB looking for those guys.
Yeah, Keel had always mentioned that they had sort of an Oriental look to them a lot of times.
Yes. Some of them could be Scandinavians working for the Soviets, though. I'd assume so. You had some Soviet spies, some ex-Nazi spies, some British spies, French. It's So it's hard to say who was which spy.
Do you think any of them fall into the paranormal category?
Yeah, I think so. Well, it depends on what you call paranormal. If you have one or more people that see the same man in black, it sounds a little more likely that they saw something real. But maybe the same force, whatever it was that makes one person see it, can make three people see it. Maybe it's not any more real than a single person's hallucination or whatever it is that happens when people travel to other planets or get abducted. When there's, you know, because some of these are real, where people are being visited by a real person, and some of them are possibly hallucinatory, right. And some of them, the only other category, the third category, is interdimensional. But you know, the interdimensional one could enter into number two. They could be in a certain state that allows them to see a quote interdimensional person,
right?
And it seems totally real. The only thing that would flesh it out and make us know that it was really real as if many people met the person, the man in black, over time. And you could actually, at that point, you start to think it's maybe a human being, though. So it's like a catch-22. The more evidence there is for the existence of a particular MIB, the more they seem to just be a real person. And that has happened.
Has anyone ever actually caught one of these MIBs?
Supposedly that they have.
Really?
And one was arrested, one was shot, apparently, by the police.
Where was this?
New York.
Hmm.
These are tales you hear, you know, but, I mean, if it was a spy operation, you wouldn't hear much about it, though. It would get buried.
True.
And I would think that in the city like that, most of them would be, you know, spy ops. I don't know. I mean, I guess there's interdimensional creatures on Manhattan, but it's just a little harder for me to imagine.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick break, and we're going to hear another one of your songs from the Interdimensional Vortex League. We're going with, I believe, Automobile. And anything you want to say about this?
Well, that's our... That was, I guess, our first big hit. It got us into the Oscar parties 1 year, 91 or something, maybe 92, I can't remember. But they played us on the radio the night of the Oscars 1 year, and we got to go and have some fun down there. And that was our big moment. But we've been together a long time. How many? 30 years. 40? No. Oh, God. I better stop talking. It's not 40. No, it's 30. And, yeah. This is a good song. It's about UFO abduction, sort of. Pretty much.
All right. So we'll be back with Andy in about 4 minutes.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, link section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
By the shed, the unseen stare, the memories from which you fled, the big dark eyes, the pale white skin, the pointed chin, the skinny arms, the clammy skin, the big round head.
He comes to you in an automobile, coming to your town without a sound. He comes to you as you're bedding down, coming to your door, wants to explore
The pin black tie, the white rim hat that causes dread. The floating chair, the blinding light from which you fled. The tinted window, secrecy of government. The tiny mouth, the tiny talk of tiny men.
She comes to you in a spinning wheel, hovering around above your town. She comes to you in a darkened room. You both lie down without a sound.
That fill your head. The unseen face, the seamless doors of solid lead. The humming sound, the sting of painful instruments. The voices say that when they're through, you will forget.
He comes to you in an automobile, coming to your town without a sound. He comes to you as you're bedding down, coming to your door, wants to explore. She comes to you in a spinning wheel, hovering around above your town. She comes to you in a darkened room. You both lie down without a sound.
And that was the Interdimensional Vortex League. And our guest tonight, Andrew Colvin, is a part of that band. And what do you do in the band, anyway?
I'm not a music virtuoso, but I do a little bit of everything. I was a drummer for a while in the band, and keyboard for a while, do a lot of the singing. Nowadays we do a lot of cut and paste stuff that's synthetic, I guess, synthetically derived. Sometimes we have long pieces that don't have vocals, instrumentals. So we have three albums on the Mothman theme. That have a bunch of soundtrack songs, basically, for the video series that I put together. And those are some really fascinating different blends of music, all kinds of different genres. We've got a lot of people that have come and gone from the band. It's sort of an open thing. We just work with people. You know, we'll just decide, let's just do a couple of songs and see what happens. And so we've been getting more into the electronica sort of side, where we're doing some intricate editing things and creating sounds and song patterns, and we get pretty experimental at times too. But occasionally we like to do just a nice little pop kind of thing, a little pop abduction song.
Where can people find the music if they want to buy it?
iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby.
Okay. And
these came out on vinyl. Some of the later ones, I guess older ones, came out on vinyl and got played on college radio back when college radio was sort of college radio. Hmm. And we had cassette releases, 8-track, micro cassette. we did one of the first iPhone videos, a cell phone recording, early cell phone recording from a suitcase, a cell phone. We've done a lot of different crazy things, and gone all around the world doing these crazy things. And there's a long tale about it there on CD Baby. If you look up Interdimensional Vortex, like, you can read about some of our groundbreaking inventions.
Okay. What about the video series? Where can people find that?
Well, it's I let it go out of print, more or less. We did a run, a fairly sizable run that you nothing major, but contracted that out and sold those, and now I don't know. I'm just sort of getting it ready for download on the internet. I'm not sure. It's really just technical stuff. The series was done in a certain way and recorded a certain way, and it's not compatible with Amazon. Mm. So we would have to go back and redo a whole lot of it, editing wise. And so I've just sort of been putting that one on the back burner. There might be a way to make the translation and get it done easily. I'm sort of been busy with these albums and books and things.
Right.
The videos, they did well. I made a pretty good income from those, and they basically financed all the books. Hmm. And now the books have gone into the black. So
great.
I basically have a little publishing company, and I publish other people's stuff too. So that's working out well, and we sort of went from being a record company to a book company.
And that's Metadisc?
Yeah. We still do the records. The videos are just, I'm sort of waiting to hit those with all 8 cylinders at one time and get a bunch of things done and upload them.
When your friend had the premonition of 9/11, what exactly did he see?
He saw the exploding buildings and some exploding buildings in New York.
Mm. Okay.
We didn't know about the towers then, so we didn't have a reference for what it was.
Ah, okay. All right. So one of the things John Keel talks about are some of the patterns that accompany the UFO phenomena. Do you have any opinions on that?
The patterns?
Yeah, like the dates, the name game, the fact that they take names from Greek mythology a lot of times, things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's the same. You still have to, consider which ones were real people and which were visions or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Hallucinatory, interdimensional, whatever you want to call it. In that case, the percipient could be picking up memories from their genes, from their junk DNA, and they hear Greek words. And I mean, this is, some people have this where they just go into a trance and speak some other language. It happens.
Right.
So
yeah.
That could explain a lot of the strange connections that seem to be going on. There is some genuinely synchronicity happening out there too. And then, of course, if you've got spooks, they will often just use they'll use the same language that they've, because they know what. They know what the natural phenomenon is doing. They just, they may go interrogate someone for seeing something, some secret project, craft, and then they might throw in a couple of Greek words at the end to make it seem like it was an ultra-terrestrial or interdimensional being, and in that way fool everyone.
What do you think the percentage of experimental
What's
craft?
That?
What do you think like the percentage of experimental craft to actual UFOs is nowadays?
Oh boy, I don't know.
It's really hard to separate them at this point because there's so much stuff out there that you never know if you're looking at our technology or something completely anomalous.
Yeah, well, I saw something 2 years ago that I really thought was anomalous.
Really? What was that?
It was a shape-shifting UFO that I was with two other people that saw it.
Hmm.
And I took pictures of it, and you can see the difference, some of the shapes it took. Now, I still don't know what that is. If that was, could there be some kind of device that does that? I don't know. Could it be just a round device that projects holograms and make it look like it's changing shape?
Right, right.
I don't know. It could have been a synthetic craft, I suppose.
That would say a lot for our technology at that point.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But you know, I mean, we had remote vehicles, flying vehicles in the 40s.
We did.
Yes, I have an article from the 40s, True Magazine, where they talk about
it. Huh, like drones.
There's pictures of them. Well, yeah.
That I did not know.
Pictures of the control panels. Yeah, it's just all been pushed down, suppressed, because everyone wants to promote the ET thesis because it's more saleable.
Mm. So you think some cases were just these remote vehicles? What did they look like?
Well, they could put the device in anything.
Oh,
but
true.
These are airplanes. So, you know, just the idea on 911 that we didn't have planes that could fly remotely is completely bogus. It was already more than 50 years down the road.
Hmm.
60 almost.
Wow. One of the things that one of the articles you have in here that Keel mentioned something that I was not aware of, and he says that when there's a lot of UFO activity, there's almost always some kind of weird lightning strike, someone being hit by lightning or something like that. Any thoughts there? Because that seems like a weird thing to be connected, unless it's connected with the Earth or the Sun in some way.
Yeah, it could be either. It could be natural, I suppose. You know, ball of light or energy, geomagnetic energy causes vision, then person gets struck by lightning. It could happen. But also it could be synthetic, too. Because I'm pretty sure they had lasers at that time. In fact, the three guys that were impersonating the UFO investigators, Keel, Barker, and Mosley, those guys were shooting a laser thing at people.
Really?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I guess I maybe wasn't looking at it as if they were actual people. I was probably looking at it more as if they were interdimensional type of beings.
Yeah, they had the same license plate on the car as the car in West Virginia. So it was the same guys that were coming around our neighborhood. And they were up there in New Jersey harassing UFO investigators. So that tells you some things. And, you know, and I speculate on what those things might be in the books.
Hmm.
There's connections.
What do you make of cattle mutilations?
Oh, boy, 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 boy. I tend to think that they're being done by some big concerns. Energy concerns, mining concerns.
What for?
Real estate scams, run people off their land. It's a good way to run people off their land.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's also a way to mine to do prospecting.
How so?
Trace minerals leach up.
Oh.
Into the plants. Animals eat the plants. If you kill them on the spot, you can have a better read on what's underground at that spot.
Hmm.
That's called biogeochemistry. It's a real field. And for some reason, it never gets mentioned in any stories about it. And nor does in with crop circles, do you ever hear that these could be done by computers on satellites. They'll consider every single possibility in the world except for the obvious one.
Which, and how would that be done?
Just with lasers from satellites. Program in the design, it makes the design.
It does seem like a lot of the crop circles have been proven to be fakes for the most part, like man-made.
Yeah, that was an interesting little wrinkle they put in there. To say that it was being done by people on the ground, that was a good fallback position, so then nobody had to consider satellites. So satellites are still off the radar. I can only think of me and maybe one or two other people that have ever gone in that direction. Although they're starting to come, you know, I was the first, I'm pretty sure, just because I'm uber skeptical sometimes, and as time has gone by, now you're hearing more crop circle people say, well, you know, maybe, you know, because these designs are all human based sort of,
yeah,
you know, why would aliens do, you know, designs designed to meet our historical perspectives or future perspectives, like with designs of computer chips and things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just doesn't wash. So, unfortunately, I know that it hurts. Might hurt the tourist industry, but so I don't go around preaching on that one too much. I just, if somebody asked me, well, you didn't ask me, so I guess I brought it up. But
well, why do you think they would do? Why would they make a crop circle? What would be the point?
To start a new religion, to start a tourist industry.
Yeah, it definitely has done that.
Probably won't run a farmer off his land, though.
Right, right.
Yeah.
They put up donation boxes, and they make money off of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally sold that whole region of Britain that has the earthworks as a special place. I mean, they've totally made that into a huge industry.
All right.
It goes along with the summer festivals they have, too.
Really?
They get more music, more beer being sold, you name it. Yep.
One of the things Keel mentions in the book that I hadn't heard him in your book of writings of his, he mentions that UFOs also correlate to solar activity, and I thought that was very interesting because Robert Schock has a book out showing how psychic ability also correlates to solar activity, and it seems like that would be a direct tie-in right there.
Yeah. Puharish back in the 60s was doing some research like that too. Yeah. Whenever you have whenever the sun's more active, we have less psychic things happening here.
I thought it was the other way around.
That was what I thought too, but, and I could have it backwards. I could have it backwards. But I remember running across both examples. Which one was it?
I'm pretty sure when it's more active, because I thought it was the other way around, and then I think it turned out to be when it's more active, psychic ability increases.
Yeah, we'll have to check it.
I mean, regardless, there's a correlation.
As far as it goes with the experiments done in the lab, when there's when one end of the spectrum is passive, it tends to be more receptive to, it's being quieter, you see, so it listens and it hears signals better. See, there's a sending and receiving, so the sun may be sending more, I don't know, when it's, you know, and is there a correlation between solar flares here or not?
Right.
Or are we just talking about there's a multitude of different waves involved, so but the basic idea is that it's like a balloon. You squeeze one end and the other end gets filled up. It's like it's a cycle. So there are periods where we have higher psychic ability because of what the sun is doing or not doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a correlation, yes. And it probably does increase scenarios where people envision these experiences. Yes, absolutely.
He also talks a lot about infrared, like being able to detect UFOs coming from the infrared, as well as being able to see invisible UFOs that are not there to the naked eye.
Yeah, then it gets real fascinating at that point, because you know you're probably not into man-made vehicles anymore. Yeah, and there are crazy things that go beyond that paradigm. So we're looking at truly unusual things, although how much of it still is in the mind of the percipient.
I remember seeing a video that was actually shot from a police helicopter in Florida where they were being followed by this basically invisible UFO. It was like a morphing type of ship, and they couldn't see it. It wasn't there, but it was showing up on their night vision cameras.
How much morphing was it doing?
Not a lot. It just seemed to be twisting around a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of like the thing I saw, which it was actually doing more than that. So, but yeah, it's hard to say how could that be man made?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like it could be.
Unless our technology is way, way far more advanced than we know of.
Or unless it's a hologram. Mm. That might not be so hard. I don't know, but
wouldn't that also be visible? I mean, to make it infrared, it almost would have to be a solid object, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Maybe they can project an infrared hologram. I don't know.
Yeah, perhaps.
I mean, it's supposed to pick up heat sources, but maybe there's a way to mimic that. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. The two Keel books you have released now are The Flying Saucer to the Center of Your Mind. These are selected writings of John Keel. And what's the other one that's published already?
The Outer Limits of the Twilight Zone.
Okay, and those are also selective writings?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what else do you have coming out?
We have The Mothman Squeaks, which is my sort of my finale, I suppose, of my 10-year Mothman investigation. That's coming up soon. And several other things. The other Keel book got some audio versions of some of my previous stuff. And some of Gray Barker. We're going to be maybe releasing a couple of Gray Barker things.
And Gray Barker, for anyone who doesn't know, was also an investigator of the Mothman.
Yeah. I've got a couple of movies I'm working on, the WTO thing and a thing about the Slacker Generation.
Hmm. Didn't you already do one on the Slacker Generation?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Well, I've been working on it for a long time. It's one of these things where you follow people for 25 years, and we are just getting to 25 years. So wow. I gave myself that much time to to get it done. So I'm going to be pulling that together. And I've already already pulled it together in some fashion. It's 100 hours of material.
Wow.
Which I'm going to probably start with a book first. Of the stuff that using transcripts and things, the different people I interviewed, come up with a basic theory, if there is one, and then edit it for a video release.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, and you have a book on Sasquatch out as well, right?
Yeah, Praise for the Hairy Man, The Secret Life of Bigfoot. We just have the audio book of Men in Black, The Secret Terror, which is a really great book by Gray Barker.
Hmm.
Very nice audio book. Well, very well done. Perfect. We've got the perfect guy for that. He's got the right tone for telling these tales of mystery from the misty Appalachians.
Huh, interesting. Is that take Sasquatch? When you get to the Sasquatch book, does that go in more of a paranormal sense or flesh and blood type of thing?
I heard you say something about Sasquatch and being paranormal.
The Sasquatch book, does that look at it in a more paranormal sense or a flesh and blood type of sense?
The Praise book?
Yeah.
Well, we've got everybody in there. We've got people from all sides of that issue.
Oh, okay.
So everybody gets represented, but we, the authors, took we believe in the interdimensional approach. Again, though, you don't know how much of it's in the mind of the percipient and how much is outside, and how do we measure those things and really be able to say something definitive. It's a very tough job.
All right. And where can people find you on the web?
I like to hang out on Mothy Talk on Facebook.
Okay.
That's where we've got some really crack researchers there. We're on top of we pretty much solve every conspiracy out there before everybody else even knows there's a conspiracy. I can't speak more highly of it. So just go to Facebook and ask for Mothy Talk, and with a Y.
Okay.
And I've got a blog at 4tnswest.com as well. Click on Washington State.
Okay. All right. And your publishing company, does that have a website?
Metadisc. Well, that's another story, which would involve another hour. But yeah, we're under a protest. It's a long story. Our site was stolen by the NSA.
Really?
To give you a short, well, we're not sure exactly who. I guess I shouldn't say the NSA, but we don't know exactly who. Yes, yes. So I just go ahead.
Was it hacked or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're wearing the black band on our arm, and we're saying we're not even going to bother with the damn website if you're gonna do that to us. But I don't see a need for it right now, but I do think it's something that we need to get to soon, because we're starting to we're up and getting up there in books. So,
but they are all available on Amazon, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I started these as a way to do the Mothman books, and now it's sort of expanding out, and so I have to definitely get a website here.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, I thank you for talking with us.
Yep.
And maybe we'll have you back at some point and get into some other stuff.
All righty. Thank you.
And we're going to end with Flying High with the Mothman from the Interdimensional Vortex League. Anything you want to say about this one?
R.I.P. Lou Reed. It's a Lou Reed song that we changed the lyrics to. And it's pretty good.
All right.
Okay. It's a fun one.
All right.
Hopefully.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Indrid came to West Virginia. He hitchhiked his way across the Ohio. Bought himself a big black car, blew some minds near and far, said, "Hey, bud. Flying high with the Mothman." Said, "Hey, pal, flying high with the Mothman." Apol came from way up in the canyon, acting like some kind of Charlie Manson. But he never lost his cool, making ultra-terrestrials drool. "Hey, bud, flying high with the Mothman." Said, "Hey, pal, flying high with the Mothman." Mr. Keel came to the TNT, got some phone calls from the CIA. Bigfoot scat was something to fear. Aliens coming up the rear. Said, "Hey, squids, flying high with the Mothman." Said, "Hey, bigs, flying high with the Mothman." Charlie Barker had the final word. The ghost of Sarah Jane was there. The whole place was a freaking lair. Said, hey, pal, flying high with the Mothman. Said, hey, Sal, flying high with the Mothman. Larry Layton spent some time in Boomer. Patty Hearst was he and Ingrid's groomer. Union Carbide had to crash. Jonestown was a major blast. I said, hey, Joe, flying high with the Mothman. Said, hey, Schmo, flying high with the Mothman. Dressing up like clowns, using psychic energies, church and state and all that sleaze. To say, hey, bud, flying high with the Mothman.